Thanks, Arm Pro Dan. You may or may not have sensed a theme. So our career enlisted aviators, which Sergeant Prodan and Sergeant Scott are, as enlisted aviators on aircraft, sometimes and many times in our aircraft, they have to be multifunctional. They're doing jobs that usually take that are spanning multiple specialty codes in the Air Force. So like Sergeant Prodan was alluding to, as a flight engineer, he's also doing loadmaster duties. And Sergeant Scott also as a special mission aviator as well, an aerial gunner, also doing loadmaster duties. And that's indicative of the caliber of airmen we have in our command. So I'm proud of both of you. You guys are like my little children. And so the Osprey is truly a remarkable aircraft. And I'm proud we've had it out here this week. I hope you guys have enjoyed seeing it fly around in our air demos and parked in Boeing Plaza. It's an incredible aircraft. It has me sometimes scratching my head at some of its capabilities, and it fits kind of right into a lot of the themes I've seen here at Air Adventure, with some of these aircraft here doing some amazing things. So that's awesome. Captain Bailey, you're next.
All right. Good evening. My name is Captain Lauren Bailey. I'm an MC-130H pilot, and I'm actually in between two crew positions right now. For the past 2 years, I've been a co-pilot on the MC-130H, and I'm actually in training right now to become an aircraft commander. I've got my first check ride supposed to be coming up this week. So first of four check rides this week coming up. And what I did as a co-pilot was I learned the basic skills of flying the MC-130H. I learned how to do three-engine approaches if we lost an engine for some reason, and I honed my skills in the right seat of the MC-130H. Now I'm transitioning over to the left seat as an aircraft commander trainee, and I'm learning how to handle more complex emergencies. I'm learning how to handle an aircraft that may only have two engines left. I'm learning how to take off an aircraft with three engines in case downrange or an emergency situation, we need to utilize these capabilities. But what I'm really learning is how to manage a crew and a profile, which is the biggest challenge, I think, for moving from the right seat to the left seat is, you know, not everything goes perfect on these missions, and you have to learn to be flexible, but you still have certain timelines that you have to meet. So that's a lot of the challenge that comes with being the aircraft commander, is making a good decision for the mission and for your crew members. Behind the two pilots, there's a flight engineer, so that's an enlisted crew position on our aircraft, and you can think of them as the systems expert. They know everything about the systems. If we have something wrong with our aircraft, they're getting in there, they're troubleshooting, and helping us make a good informed decision for the crew themselves. They run the fuel panel, and they are the jack of all trades on that aircraft. I'm very thankful that we have a flight engineer on our aircraft. Just behind them, we have the navigator, kind of describes their name, describes what they do, but they help us navigate through the low level. They help plan the airdrops. They help us design our self-contained approaches, and they help us determine what the radar is telling us and where we need to go on a low level. Since we do have the radars out in front, if you saw the MC-130H out there this week, we have that big nose in the front of us, and that's got our radars out there, so the navigator helps to interpret what we're seeing on the radar. Right beside them, we've got the EWO, which is the electronic warfare officer, and they are a threat expert. They are in charge of all of our defensive systems, and they keep us safe if we go into a hostile environment. And those two work together to make sure we are planning the best route to minimize that exposure as well. All of those people I just talked about are up in the cockpit. Anything after the cockpit is the responsibility of the loadmasters. And we usually have one to two on board, one at all times, and then some two depending on the mission. And they are responsible for the entire back half of the aircraft. They're signaling the helicopters when we're fueling them. They're in charge of all of our passengers back there, all of our jumpers, and all of our cargo. And they're a great asset to help us keep informed of what's going on in the back of the aircraft. I described a little bit about kind of what the crew does, but in there you probably heard that we can have cargo, we can have jumpers, we can refuel helicopters, so we can refuel CV-22s. We can also not only refuel aircraft in the air, but we can refuel them on the ground, which is a great capability. We can refuel U-28s on the ground, we can refuel fighters on the ground. So our ability to get into short fields and be able to refuel these assets is a great ability for us to have. And then just because of our nose, that big radar that's in the nose, we can get into places regardless of the weather and the terrain around us. So we have a wide variety of capabilities on the MC-130H, and it makes it a really fun aircraft to fly.
Awesome. No doubt. And if you weren't able to catch our air demo on Thursday, we have another MC-130 demo coming up Sunday afternoon where you will see the max effort landing and the reverse taxi capabilities on MC-130, which to me is highly remarkable, one of my favorite things about your aircraft and what it does. Something else you're currently experiencing is aircraft commander upgrade. And so this upgrade is reserved for those who are highly trusted to lead and direct their crew in any situation. So congratulations on getting there. I know you're going to crush training, and we're hoping that you pass your check ride with flying colors.
Get it?
Little dad joke there. I can hear my kids at home now. Dad, you're so lame. One of the qualities most people arguably look for in their leaders is vision. General Slife, sir, since the day, maybe even before you got into command, you saw that the AFSOC we needed the last 20 years is not the AFSOC we will need in tomorrow's fight. As our force stands at this strategic inflection point where we have to not only change, but do so faster than we ever have, what is the biggest challenge you see facing the command today and in the future?
Well, it's too bad you couldn't find a complicated question to ask, Sergeant Benjamin. Well, the biggest challenge facing our command right now is the fact that we collectively have to do the hardest thing that any organization ever has to do, I believe, and that is to transform itself in the aftermath of success. For the last 20 years, these airmen and their predecessors have been spectacularly successful at the tactical level in the military operations our nation has asked us to conduct for the last 20 years. And so when you think about all the major missions, all the things that have captured headlines, it's a pretty safe bet that behind the scenes somewhere, one of these airmen or their teammates have been involved in that mission. And so we have this kind of tremendous pride in what we have been able to contribute to the nation for the last 20 years. But that is not the future operating environment. What the, 10, 15, 20 years from now, what that is going to require of America's air commandos is very, very different than what we've been doing for the last 20 years. And so, we really find ourselves at a point where we have to transform ourselves in the aftermath of success, which is very difficult because, everybody has such pride in what we've been doing that the idea of putting some of that aside and shifting to the future can be very intimidating. But that's the challenge of our time, and we're happy to take it on. Sergeant Benjamin, you didn't ask me about my platform. So I just want to tell you that my platform is a nice mahogany veneered desk. It's about 3.5 feet by 5 feet. And I get to fly that desk every day and support these airmen and their squadrons, which is the privilege of a lifetime. As you listen to their pride in what they do, can you imagine being lucky enough to get to come to work every day and work for people like that? So that's my platform.
Thank you, sir. And you do a phenomenal job on that platform. We definitely appreciate the support, and I look forward to seeing all the pieces come together as our command transforms and reorients to the future. The next question I have for our guests is, how did you get into flying, or what was your career path? And Captain Bailey, man, we'll start with you.
All right. So I'd like to say it's non-traditional, but I'm sure a lot of us up here have a non-traditional way to getting into flying. We probably wouldn't make a very good panel if we had just a traditional way of getting into flying. But I first got interested in flying as a little girl. My dad got his private pilot's license, and I would get to fly over my elementary school, over my school, over a bunch of other landmarks, and at that time, that was the coolest thing in the world to me. And I decided at that point in my life that I wanted to fly as well, but I thought it was going to be only in the capacity of a hobby, kind of like my dad did. I didn't see a lot of female aviators in these professional roles, so at that point, I thought it was going to be limited more to a hobby. For me. And then as I got older, I started to get more and more interested into service academies and started looking into some of the professions I could get after that. And I started to focus more on the Air Force Academy and realized that about half of the class from the Air Force Academy gets pilot training slots. And that means that I could possibly get a pilot training slot and not just do this flying thing as a hobby anymore. It could actually be a profession. So I ended up going to the Air Force Academy. And unfortunately, while I was there, I was deemed not medically qualified to be a pilot. I had some issues with my eyes, and I started out my career as an operations research analyst. It's kind of a blessing in disguise for somebody that was medically not qualified to fly because I got to evaluate air-to-ground weapons. So any platform, any aircraft in the Air Force that drops an air-to-ground weapon, I got to analyze them. So I was surrounded by air crew members. I was surrounded by aircraft, and I was surrounded by weapons, and that was awesome for somebody that had once had a dream to be a flyer. And just being surrounded by that and being surrounded by people that saw this passion in me, they encouraged me to fight for a waiver and continue to fight to try to be an Air Force pilot. So about a year into being an analyst, I decided it was time to start getting a waiver. So I started working to get a waiver for my eyes. And then I also decided this was going to be a big life change. I was going to be going from a job that I knew and had gotten pretty good at to switching careers up completely. So I wanted to make sure it was going to be for me. So I took my own time and my own money and started to invest in a private pilot's license. And I'll tell you, once I got to my solo, I was hooked. I mean, it didn't matter how much the flights cost. I was going to be doing them every single day. And it was at that point I realized that flying needed to continue to be in my future, whether it was just as a hobby or as a profession. So I got my medical waiver about a year into trying to get it, and then I decided to apply for pilot training to switch careers from an analyst to a pilot at that point. Unfortunately, my first time around, I was not selected to be a pilot, and you're probably like, wow, she's telling us she didn't get picked up. That's just to say that if you don't get picked up for something the first time, it's still possible, you know, 5-10 years down the road, you could be sitting on a stage like this, something you never thought you'd get to do. So I didn't get picked up, and I allowed myself to cry it out for probably a good week and thought I'd never get my wings, and my private pilot's license was the best I was going to get. Nothing against having a private pilot's license, but it wasn't the end goal for me. So I decided to pursue it and continue on with it. So that next year, after giving myself a little time to cry it out, I decided to get my master's degree. I got my private pilot's license. I decided I was going to be the best analyst at the Air Force.